Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Stephen Dixon filled in for Sophie Ridge this week and began by interviewing Gina Miller. In early September, Miller and her legal team will bring a court case to determine key questions about the government's plans to deliver a no-deal Brexit. The government has issued its response to Miller, allowing her side to claim an important victory.
What exactly are they saying to you?
Well, what they've said is unequivocally they accept that to close down Parliament, to bypass them in terms of Brexit, or stopping a no-deal Brexit in particular, is illegal. So without having to go to court, they've conceded. We've basically called their bluff.
So they're saying, in effect, that there are rules in place where they have to meet for a certain amount of time before October the 31st.
Yes, the MPs passed this Northern Ireland Executive Act, and under Section 3 of that, the MPs will have three occasions of several days at a time between the 4th of September and the 31st of October. And the government, as I said, has given me huge amount of reassurances and has gone to great lengths to say, yes, we absolutely agree that the MPs will have that opportunity. So it's a lot of bluster what they're saying, that MPs will be denied that opportunity.
Despite this breakthrough, Miller added that there was still a great deal that needed to be done before a no-deal exit could be taken off the table.
Whilst they've given this reassurance of no prorogation of Parliament, one of the central tenets of my legal letter to the Prime Minister was to say that if you deny MPs the ability to pass legislation to stop no deal, that would be contrary to Parliament's sovereignty. So we will be going back again to seek that reassurance, amongst others, that they will allow Parliament to pass legislation to stop no deal.
But it still leaves a very big question mark, doesn't it? And there are lots of people coming forward. We talk to them all the time saying, you know, this cannot happen. Parliament will not allow it to happen. But what you're effectively saying is, ultimately, it could happen, and there's nothing anyone could actually do to stop it.
Well, at the moment, Parliament has to find a way, instruments and ways of ensuring that they can pass that legislation. Scrutinising, which is what the government letter has confirmed, that Parliament will be able to scrutinise and examine all options when it comes to exiting, is not the same as giving them the ability to pass legislation. And because we already have in legislation that the 31st of October is our exit day, they need to pass other legislation to prevent no deal or to change that date, ask for an extension. So forgetting about, you know, who's going to be king of the castle in a union government or etc., I would say this letter shows that MPs really have to concentrate in ensuring that they have that opportunity, and we will go back to make sure that the MPs are given that opportunity via further legal assurances. But prorogation is off the table.
However, the Energy Minister, Kwasi Kwarteng, insisted that the government's policy was not about to change and downplayed leaked government documents which explored the negative consequences of no deal.
The Prime Minister is effectively saying no deal is unstoppable if we want that to happen. Isn't he? Is that actually the case?
What he's saying is that we're going to leave with or without a deal on the 31st of October. And the reason he's saying that is that this has gone on too long. It was actually the policy of the previous government, Theresa May's government, that no deal was better than a bad deal. And I heard her say that, as many people did, hundreds of times. And we've got to deliver on that. One way or the other, we are leaving the EU on the 31st of October, and that's what the government's focused on.
But the Prime Minister's gone from saying it was a million-to-one chance that we wouldn't get a deal to now being, perhaps some would say, a little bit more realistic about it. It is looking unlikely, isn't it? The EU don't seem to want to be playing ball here.
Well, these things can change very quickly, and we've always said that our first aim, our preferred outcome, is for a deal. But if we don't get a deal, we have to be prepared to leave without one. And that's very clear. That was always been the policy of the government, even two or three years ago, when this whole process started. We wanted to get a deal, but we should have been prepared to leave without one.
But if we do leave without one, according to Operation Yellowhammer, hard border in Northern Ireland, shortages of food, fuel and medicines, you know, that does sound pretty bad, you've got to be honest.
I think there's a lot of scaremongering around, and a lot of people are playing into Project Fear and all the rest of it. We've got to prepare for no deal. In fact, the previous Prime Minister created DEXU, and she said that the mandate of DEXU last year, last summer, was to prepare for no deal. I was working in that department. That's what we were focused on. Now we've got a new Prime Minister who is very much focused on that, and the scale and intensity of those preparations are increasing, and we will be fully prepared to leave without a deal on the 31st of October.
The Labour Shadow Minister, Laura Pidcock, defended the right of her leader, Jeremy Corbyn, to head a government of national unity if the current government falls.
In terms, then, if you're saying the determination here is to act in the best interests of the country, would you then support a government of national unity where Jeremy Corbyn was not the caretaker Prime Minister and perhaps someone like Kenneth Clarke was?
I think constitutionally it is right. Jeremy Corbyn is the leader of the opposition. It is the largest party that isn't in government. He should lead those conversations. And, you know, he carries with him the largest amount of MPs. And quite frankly, I think it's arrogant of, you know, say the Liberal Democrats or other people who don't have such a mandate in Parliament. Remember, Jeremy Corbyn was sent to, as the leader of the Labour Party, he was elected twice, but also had 40% of the vote share at the last election. I think it's quite strange, if I'm honest, that we're considering other options. Constitutionally, that is the right thing to do. But let's consider the inverse. If Jeremy wasn't doing this, if he wasn't trying to reach out across all sides of the House of Commons, what would people say? You know, he is absolutely doing the right thing to avert this no-deal Brexit that we have said in our manifesto, that we have said time and time again in the House of Commons, that other political parties have committed to. The only way to do that is to get behind Jeremy Corbyn so that he can have this time limit period as a caretaker Prime Minister to avert a no-deal Brexit.
The former Foreign Secretary Malcolm Rifkind has warned of the consequences if Beijing tried to use its security forces to suppress the protests in Hong Kong.
Clearly, these protests have become stronger, particularly over the last week or so, and more violent as a result of all of that. We're now at a point, aren't we, where one would imagine pretty close to seeing China wanting to intervene here. What impact would that actually have?
Well, it would be disastrous for Hong Kong, but it would also be pretty disastrous for China, because sending the People's Liberation Army or tens of thousands of military into Hong Kong is infinitely more complicated than the terrible events at Tiananmen Square a long time ago. Tiananmen Square was a square, one single square, although very large, in the centre of Beijing. It could be surrounded and gradually taken under Chinese control. Hong Kong is a territory of 7 million people. It's like a small country. And therefore, although undoubtedly the Chinese could dominate and destroy the current autonomy of Hong Kong, they could control the place in the short term, it would, for all practical purposes, be like occupying a foreign country, because there would be a lot of resistance, there would be a lot of civil disobedience, and that would continue for quite a long time.
What then, in your view, should or could Britain do to help ease the tensions when we've been told, we heard from the Chinese ambassador to London and other Chinese ministers saying that there shouldn't be any, as they phrased it, foreign meddling in this? Is there any movement for Britain here?
No. The position of the United Kingdom is quite different to all other countries, including the United States. The whole basis of two systems in one country was a treaty signed by the British government and the Chinese government. That treaty has been deposited at the United Nations. We have a perfect right, if that treaty is being breached, to make our concerns known in the most robust way possible. Now, I'm not being unrealistic, of course, but the idea that we have no right to comment when China appears to be in breach or contemplating a massive breach of a treaty which we were the co-signatory to, the Chinese are on pretty rotten ground, as they well know, if they make that kind of argument.
And finally, Rifkind said that Boris Johnson could still have the rug pulled from underneath him by his own side.
There's been talk of a national unity government, Jeremy Corbyn being a caretaker Prime Minister, or perhaps Kenneth Clarke. That would all need a vote of no confidence to be passed in Boris Johnson, in effect. Do you think that that will happen?
I think it might happen, because it doesn't need many on the Conservative side to either abstain. They don't have to vote against the government, they could abstain. But it only needs a small number, and the government are defeated, and it seems likely the numbers are there.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and we also have a special offer. You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for just £12, and you'll receive a free Amazon voucher worth £20. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.